Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Gentlemen, welcome aboard the Athletics Can't Wait Jets podcast, your nonstop shop for all things Jets. Now here are your hosts, Tim McMaster and Connor Hughes. Listen safely.
Can't wait.
Welcome back, everybody. The Jets did not lose in Week 10. That's the best part of a bye week when you're 0-9. We're back, though, with a big show today. Tim McMaster here along with Connor Hughes, our Jets beat writer at The Athletic, and our producer, Marissa Morris. We're going to get into the latest news about Sam Darnold, but more importantly than that, we're very excited to have Dane Brugler joining the show a little bit later, our NFL draft guru at The Athletic. He's going to talk about Trevor Lawrence, Justin Fields, much more. So subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcast. Please give us a 5-star rating as well. Connor, how was your bye week?
It was good, man. It was good. I got a chance to, I always say this, and actually, you know, it's kind of, it's a little sad, but at the same time, it is the truth. And it's something that, like, I tweeted this one out there finally, but I'm kind of reminded whenever the Jets have a bye or whenever they play on Monday night, what like other football looks like. And I don't mean that in terms of like, you know, a low blow shot at the Jets. Like, I'm not trying to take, you know, kick the team while they're down. Like, I understand they're a rebuilding team. They're redoing this roster. They're making changes, yada, yada, yada. I get all that, you know, but watching a game like the Cardinals and Bills, like that game that like just went down to the wire, like watching that one, watching even the Giants Eagles, you know, that game, because watching them the 27-17, but still 24-17 kind of going down to the wire, watching that game for the Jets draft implications, watching games like that, especially the Cardinals one, though, it's kind of like, man, if the Jets actually finish this season 1-15, 0-16, if the Jets actually get this number one pick in the draft, if the Jets get Trevor Lawrence and Joe Douglas continues to round out this roster and the rest of his drafts look as good as this first one did, to think like the Jets could be like what the Bills are, or the Jets could be like the Cardinals are, and be playing in games like that every Sunday and be that kind of a team and to be covering that team. It kind of like, normally I watch other games around the NFL when the Jets aren't on. I'm like, man, this is what real football looks like. But this time I kind of looked through it in the lens of I would love to cover games like that. You can kind of like maybe see that light at the end of the tunnel and be like, I maybe someday I can be covering weekly games like that, where you got the exciting quarterback, the exciting offense, the game winning plays at the end. I know I say that now. And then of course, when I'm up on the deadline and I've got to write a game story and, you know, it looks like Trevor Lawrence just threw a game-winning touchdown, only to then have the defense break down and give up a Hail Mary to DeAndre Hopkins. Like, I'm sure that I would be like cursing to the high heavens, but I don't know. That was kind of how I spent my bye. You know, my mom came over. I've always said this before, that football in the Hughes household growing up was pretty big. You know, I'd wake up and watch ESPN's preview show from 11 to 12. Fox came 12 to 1. Then I watched the 1 o'clock game, 4 o'clock game, NFL primetime, and then the Sunday night game. And my mom would always have like my friends over, and we did do like the big football Sunday party with wings and food and all that. And, you know, obviously I don't get a chance to watch many football games with my mom anymore because I work every Sunday. So she came over to the apartment and we watched the, some of the games, and that was fun. So it was cool. Like I really enjoyed it. You know, I was having a really good week until today when my fish died. So that was always good.
That was such an optimistic and happy outlook. And then you finish it off with, oh, and RIP, my fish died. What a way to wake up.
It's bad. Like, all right, so my cousin's like real big into like the fish tank stuff, right? Like that's my
Your cousin is.
Yeah, like he is. Like he's the one who kind of like got me into fish. Like I know, like anytime you have a fish question, you go and you ask Bobby. And so, so I like, remember I talked to him months ago and I was like, man, I'm looking for some cool fish. Like I'm to the point where I got to restock again. He turned me onto these things called like Bosmanian rainbow fish or something like that. And they look cool. Like they're silver, but when they move, like they shimmer in like all these different colors, and the males are, you get like one male and like four female, and then they school together, and then the females up their color because they want to impress the male, and the male ups their color. I mean, it's like a cool little concept. these things just drop dead at like the drop of a hat. Like they constantly die on me. And I'm originally, I'm like, is it me? But I have like these glass catfish things in there. I have auto catfish. Like these fish are supposed to like die easy. And I've had them for like years. And my, like I have a angelfish in there. It's like 6 years old. So I know I'm not like killing these things. I'm not doing anything wrong, but I can't keep these goddamn rainbow fish alive. I can't. They just die on me all the time. They're all dying. And so like, I finally like got three. Two of them died up to five. I was like, maybe the school wasn't big enough. Those die off. Then I finally like up it a little bit more. I'm like, all right, we're going to go all in again. I kept these alive for like 2 months. Then all of a sudden one dies. Then the next one dies. Then the next one dies. It's just, they all die. And it's like, looks like they die slow, painful death. So I saw one like gulping at the top of the tank. I was like,
that's the worst. This guy's when they're not side, like world. Sideways. They swim sideways.
He's like,
for a while.
He's like swimming at the top, like gasping for air. I'm like, what the, like, what's wrong with you? No other fish is doing this. No other, any of them in there. None of the other fish are doing this. And outside, look, and I find him like suction cup to the filter today. I'm like, God, this is a great way to start my day. Lost another fish. I like those right. guys, though, I'm not emotionally attached to. When my angel fish goes, like, that's the one where I'm going to be like, oh, because that guy's been with me since I lived in Morristown, man. That,
wow,
that
you moved. That's impressive to move with
the
fish.
Moved with the fish and wow. stayed alive.
Tim, do you got a transition from fish to Jets?
Fish to Darnold? I don't know where that is, but we'll just jump.
Belly up and so did the Jets.
There you go.
That's just the easy one. All right, let's talk about Sam, because we thought going into the bye week that, hey, extra time off, Sam will get healthy, and we'll see another chance, maybe with a full receiving core, to see what he can do in the second half of the season after the bye week. But yesterday, meeting with Gase and Darnold, you were on those Zoom calls, Connor. He's going to miss this game, probably going to miss the Dolphins game too, it sounds like. And it's an AC sprain that they're just going to, at this point, instead of managing it, just let it get to 100%, which, I mean, it's good for his health overall, but it's not good for figuring out Sam Darnold here down the stretch.
No, it's not. And I think, you know, there was with Sam, there was always like, look, I mean, if the Jets finish 0-16, they're picking Trevor Lawrence. If they finish 1-15 and have the top pick in the draft, they're picking Trevor Lawrence. We're going to have Dane on in a bit here to talk about the differences between Trevor Lawrence and Landry. Justin Fields. Like we're going to talk about the difference between them, because if the Jets finish number two, I'm starting to think that they might take Justin Fields because of how good this kid looks. I can't wait to see that game this weekend. But there was always this outside chance that these final seven games, Sam could come out of the bye, return as the team's starting quarterback, play well these final 7 weeks, steal a game or two, you know, maybe beat the Chargers or beat the Raiders when they come to East Coast, beat the Patriots, kind of take the Jets out of that top 1-2 selection, have them picking three, have them picking four, show enough that he still is and can be this team's franchise quarterback. And be that guy and kind of, you know, end up being the one that reaps the rewards of Joe Douglas's incoming talent infusion. You know, that Sam will be the guy that is the recipient of all of these draft picks. You know, he'll be the one that's the recipient of the $90 million in salary cap space. That's Sam, not Trevor Lawrence, not Justin Fields, not anyone else. It'll be Sam that reaps these rewards. And with this injury, I just kind of get the feeling that it puts the capper on it, that this is, you know, this is the end for Sam. And he's going to play again this year. Like he will, like he said, he plans on playing this year. The Jets said, you know, Adam Gase said they have no plans on putting him on the season ending in injured reserve. You know, that's not something that they're considering right now, but it's just hard to see him doing it. You know what I mean? Like, it's hard to see there being enough time for him to get the Jets to a point where it is him, unless maybe Joe Flacco steals a game. Like, obviously that's possible. Joe Flacco could steal a game and then Sam gets one at the end of the year. I mean, that's always in the cards, but Sam's not going to play this week. It sounded very, very much like he's not going to play against the Dolphins. He probably will not play the week after that. And then maybe you get him back in there, you know, in 3-4 weeks down the road. So it's sad, man, because I don't think that it had to go this way. Like, Sam, I still think has talent. Sam, I still think has the potential to be a franchise quarterback if you surround him with all the pieces, but you're obviously not going to give up on the chance to draft Trevor Lawrence or Justin Fields to take a chance that maybe Sam turns it around in year four, because we have a story up on The Athletic last year. And I compared what Jared Goff had done in year three and Russell Wilson had done in year three. Who else did they use? Deshaun Watson and what he did and all these guys did in year three and what that set the stage for in year four. And then you kind of compare what they, you know, those guys were completing 65% of their passes, coming off 4,000 and 3,800 yard passing years, and doing all of these impressive things, 30 touchdowns, 10 interceptions, things like that, leading their team to the playoffs. And you got Sam coming off year three Sam's going to be entering year four, having never played a complete season, coming off the worst statistical year of his career, and basically a mechanical mess. And it's just kind of a shame because this injury is just like, I wrote it yesterday. This injury is just going to be a footnote in like Sam Darnold's tenure with the Jets. Like when he's gone, no one's really going to talk about it, but it's a shame because it kind of like solidifies that he's just going to go down as the next guy who failed in replacing Joe Namath. And he failed in replacing Joe Namath because the Jets failed him. And that's, yeah. that to me is kind of sad, honestly.
Yeah, it certainly is. And somebody else we can ask about Sam Darnold actually is Dane. So he is ready to go as we let him in, and we'll let his audio click in here as we continue to do it. There he is. Hey, Dane, thanks for coming on, man.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Hey, Tim here along with Connor and Marissa. We're going to throw you right into the fire here because we were just talking about Sam Darnold. We're going to get to Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields and all that stuff. But sure. But I'll start by just saying, because Connor wrote a story that's up on the site today about how, the Jets have kind of failed Sam Darnold in with these injuries and everything. So I just want to ask you, thinking back to when he was coming out of USC, what kind of grade you had on Darnold, and have you been, I don't know if the word surprised or disappointed in how it's gone in the NFL?
I don't think we talk enough about how dependent the quarterback position is at the NFL level. It's just, we talk about Sam Darnold, talk about him like with fans. If he's good enough, he should be playing better. And it's just not that simple. If you don't have the supporting cast, and not just the line, not just the receivers, but the coaching, the preparation that it takes, that's going to help you prepare for games week in, week out, you have no shot. And, I would love to find out what would have happened if, the Bears drafted Patrick Mahomes instead of Trubisky, and then Trubisky goes to the Chiefs. How do those two situations play out? Talk about two totally different circumstances and two very different quarterbacks. And it's just the supporting cast, everything around him, that factors in so much. So with Sam Darnold, that's part of the equation here. He was my top quarterback that year in that draft, ahead of Baker Mayfield, ahead of Rosen, ahead of Lamar Jackson, ahead of Josh Allen. He came out as a redshirt sophomore. He was still very young, but you could really point to parts of his tape. You watch him against Penn State in that bowl game. You watch, there's certain parts of his game that you point to and say, look, he can do this at the NFL level. The poise that he played with, the ability to throw off platform and be creative. There's so much about his college tape at USC that got you excited and got you, okay, not only what he is right now, but what he can be 2-3 years from now. Unfortunately, his development has just been stunted in New York.
You real quick again before we move on, is the Sam discussions, obviously if the Jets finish with number one, number two pick in this draft, odds are they're going quarterback. I mean, it's just, you can't pass up on one of these two kids. Sam, based off of what, you scouted him in college, you've put the film together, you've kind of looked at all of this. With Sam, do you think he still has a second round value to him if the Jets were to try to flip him? Is it because of the contract that's coming up that somebody's eventually going to have to pay him because of, now 3 years of NFL film to go along, kind of offsetting maybe somewhat of that college film? Is he now slipping more into that third round value? I mean, where would you kind of position that?
His value, plain and simple, is just whatever someone's willing to pay for him, and it's tough to say what it's going to be because he's been beat down. It's really hard to say what's his mindset right now. What's his mentality? Is he already damaged goods? There will be a team that's ready to pounce and take a chance, whether that's a team like the Broncos or the Saints. There's several candidates out there. What the asking price is going to be, that's tough. And I think best case for the Jets is just to have multiple teams out there that really want them to, drive up the asking price. And if you can end up getting, say, a second and, a sixth, or a second and then a conditional pick, whatever it is, I think that's probably best case scenario.
Gotcha. Now, I always joke, like, people ask me all the time about, like, draft stuff. Like, it's the go-to. Like, Jet fans want to know about draft stuff. They always reach out to me. And then one thing I tell them constantly, whether it's in the Athletic comment section, whether it's on Twitter, I'm like, you got to go to Dane. Like, this is not my area of expertise. I was like, you want to know the ins and outs of these players, you go to Dane. Wait for, like, that monster draft guide that you put out, which is still to this day, I have no idea how the hell you do that and stay sane. Because I, like, There's times during the draft, man, where, like, the Jets will pick somebody, and I know they've picked some people where it's like, who the hell's this guy? And I'll be like, I was like, can't be in Dane's book. I was like, can't be. It can't be that. I'm doing, like, the control F to search for the player's name, and sure enough, there the hell the dude is. And there is detailed strengths, weaknesses, positional ranking, everything. So I can't wait for that thing to come out. But how long, and this is set up another question, but how long have you actually been doing this in terms of not just for the Athletic, but, like, put it, like, with the concerted effort, I'm scouting these guys, I'm putting these guys together. I mean, when was the first year that you remember, like, doing it?
Probably my freshman year in college, in my dorm room, along with the Mount Union. So, you know, a strong football school. You know, I worked for the football team, and that was my introduction to scouting. And it really triggered something. And Pierre Garçon and I were seniors there at Mount Union. So that was my chance to learn under a lot of scouts. Create my network, that type of thing. And so, you know, that was, gosh, more years than I want to admit ago now. But it's been something that, you know, if you want to get into scouting, you need to separate yourself somehow. And for me, it was my draft guide. And I'm just, you know, it's tough because there's so many players, thousands and thousands of players every year. And it can be tough to know, okay, well, I've watched, you know, 5 tapes on this guy. Is it time to move on yet? Do I know him? I mean, time management is a big part of this. But as long as people keep enjoying it, and by, you know, according to the numbers, people love it. And so that's great. And as long as people keep enjoying it, I'll keep doing it. And I do find it, it's very resourceful because, you know, I'll be sitting here and a player that was drafted 4 years ago, you know, he'll have a foot injury, and I'll pull up his report from 4 years ago and say, oh, he injured that same foot his sophomore year at Alabama. And you know, that gives me some context. And so it's not only this year, but for future years, it's very helpful.
So then with that said, where does Trevor Lawrence rank in terms of the quarterbacks that you've looked at, in terms of the quarterbacks you've gone over, you've scouted, the grades you've handed out? Everything we hear is Trevor Lawrence is generational. Everything we hear is Trevor Lawrence is once in a lifetime. Trevor Lawrence is the best since so-and-so. You're someone who, you are someone who is, I'm looking at these quarterbacks every year. I'm putting the notes on Winston, and I'm putting the notes on Goff, and I'm putting the notes on Wentz and Wilson and all of these guys. I mean, where does Trevor rank in terms of generational players and guys that just don't come around too often?
Yeah, and it's really hard to do this because we have a sample size of these guys in the NFL. And so it's really hard not to let that poison your thoughts here of, you know, going back to just what we knew about them as college players. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's different than, say, like a Joe Burrow, because Burrow was further along, you know, mentally. And he is not a physical freak with his size and his arm. He's more going to beat you with what he can do above the neck and his poise and his confidence. And so these quarterbacks are so different. And it does make it tough when you just try to lump them into one bag and rank them. But, I mean, Trevor Lawrence, he's up there. Now, if he were in last year's class, I think he would probably be behind Joe Burrow for me just because I was sold on Joe Burrow just because the poise and confidence that he plays with is just it's uncanny for a player his age. And we've seen it this year as a rookie for the Bengals. And as soon as they get him some help on the offensive line, I mean, the Bengals are going to be a team that's going to be, you know, a threat in that AFC North. But with Trevor Lawrence, you know, ever since his freshman year, he's been penciled in as that number one pick in this draft because there's so much to like about him, both physically and mentally. And this year, before missing the last two games due to his positive COVID test, he was completing 71% of his throws. He had a 17-2 touchdown interception ratio. And the production's great, but what makes him the favorite to be the number one pick? It just comes down to the traits. And Lawrence, physically, he's just so impressive. 6'5", 220 pounds. He has the body type to withstand the violence of a full NFL schedule. He can make every throw with ease from the deep out to the bang eight. And the nimble movements are really, really impressive with him. He's making throws outside of structure from different platforms, but then also the mental standpoint. That stands out as well for a player his age.
He's above average and nowhere near a ceiling when you talk about the intangibles and just the way he processes things. He can handle protections pre-snap. He can eliminate things quickly. He'll work through his progressions. He doesn't panic or lose his cool. So the intangibles, you talk to his coaches, he's very mature. He's unassuming. He works hard to get better. They say that he's a terrific self-evaluator. So he's recognizing where he needs to get better and focusing on the development. So not only does he have the physical tools, but the instincts as a passer, the genuine character, it's even better than just physically what he has. And so in today's NFL, it's all about creativity. It's all about athletic arm talent at the quarterback position. And that's exactly what Lawrence brings to the field. And it's similar discussion. It's not just what he is now, but he's still learning and getting better and better. So I think that's an area where, fans can get excited about him.
Is there anything that when you flip on the film and you're watching, is there anything that gives you the pause, that gives you like that? I don't know, a red flag is probably too strong of a word, but where would the weakness be? You know, is it, I know he's not a big slider. I know that's kind of something where it seems like he welcomes the contact a little bit right now when he runs, which is something he'll learn not to do in the NFL. But I mean, is there anything that kind of stands out to you where that's a little, all this is great, but you know, what is the but with Lawrence or is there one?
I think it just comes down to consistency from an accuracy and mechanical standpoint. Quarterbacks like that who are so much more talented than everybody else, they haven't had to be pinpoint accurate their entire lives, or the mechanics haven't had to be perfect because they can get away with it. And Trevor Lawrence is no different. He just needs to get better from a consistency standpoint. Now, he's not an inaccurate quarterback. He just needs to improve the consistency, understand ball placement, throwing it away from defenders, things like that, to help out his receivers. And, when I studied him over the summer, I was a little turned off that his two least impressive games from a passing standpoint were the final two games of the year against Ohio State and against LSU in the national title game. Now, he ran all over Ohio State, but from a passing perspective, he was okay. Wasn't great. Mm-hmm. And Ohio State was probably one of the best defenses they faced that year with the secondary talent with Chase Young rushing off the edge. And then against LSU in the national title game, obviously, the Clemson defense just they couldn't stop Joe Burrow. But it was not a great game for Trevor Lawrence. So those two games gave me pause, but he's only a sophomore. This year, he's getting better and better and better. Unfortunately, we didn't get to see him against Notre Dame. Now, maybe we will in the ACC title game. And so any chance to see him against a formidable opponent, you're going to take that tape, and it's going to be something that's very important for his final eval.
So you move from Lawrence to Fields, and I guess the question there is, it's obviously a very different kind of quarterback. Dane Fields runs a lot better, and he's thrown great accuracy this year as well. But when you look at those two guys, in your mind, is the gap large? Has Justin Fields cut into it this season from what you've seen? How do you compare Lawrence and Fields?
Beauty is in the eye of the beholder, and that's so, so true when it comes to quarterbacks. It's really interesting how you could see two players, and maybe for a certain scheme, maybe for what you have in mind, you might like him a little different. And with Fields, he's really interesting because when I sat down this summer and I really studied him, I came away more impressed with Ryan Day, the Ohio State head coach, than Fields. And that's not meant to be a dig at Fields because I think he's great. It's just more how impressed I was with Day and his, the schematic play calling and all of that. He's so good at using all of Ohio State's weapons, and really Fields, he's the perfect point guard for that offense. But this season, we've only seen three games, but Fields is playing better and better. And I think that should be expected when you factor in last year was his first year in Columbus. So he was still learning the playbook, getting to know his teammates. And I give him credit because when this looked like the season was going south, the Big Ten said, okay, we're not playing a fall schedule. He never once considered, hey, all right, I'm going to opt out, get ready for the draft. I'm going to be a top 10 pick. He started a petition to play. He did everything in his power because he could not wait to show everybody what he could do with another year under his belt in that offense, with that coaching. And through three games, he's been phenomenal. So you're talking about a player who's a thick athlete. He's got speed. He moves around well. He'll gash defenses with his legs. but he's naturally accurate. He's got a clean, natural stroke. He understands ball placement to lead his targets away from defenders. I think my favorite thing about Fields is just his calm, cool demeanor. You know, the spotlight's been on him for a very long time, and he's never wilted. So, I think on the flip side, that coolness to him, sometimes he's holding the ball too long. He needs to do a better job going 1 to 2 to 3 in his reads. And, you know, honestly, for those of us on the outside, we're at a disadvantage because teams, they're going to have a chance to sit down with him pre-draft and get a better sense for what he's seeing pre-snap. You know, what's his recall like, his ability to break down coverages, sit down, watch tape and say, okay, what are you seeing here? Why aren't you moving off this read? And, you know, how efficient can you be? And, you know, just what are you seeing? And that's so important to evaluating this position. But just watching him on tape so far this year, he's showing improved timing. The ball's up and gone. And that's something scouts really want to see the rest of the year.
How close is that gap, right? I mean, what is kind of the things, like when you look at Trevor Lawrence and you say like, okay, this is what makes him kind of the presumed number one pick in the draft. Fields, I know he's number two on your big board, which just came out, which is for any Jet fan that's interested in looking at what this team could do. I mean, the Jets have, what is it? They project to have number one, number 20, and number 33 this year's picks in the draft. So potential. I mean, you should knock every one of the guys they're going to pick there. So any Jet fan that's looking for an early look at what this draft could look like, definitely take out Dane's big board. I know it's pinned on the Jets page on The Athletic, and I'm sure you can find it just by going to Dane's actual author page. But I mean, when you see what is kind of the compare, I know it's maybe apples, oranges, and like you said, beauty's kind of in the eye of the beholder. But when you compare those two, where is kind of the separation point, you know, or what can Fields do, I guess, to narrow the gap even more to almost make this a coin flip come the end of April?
You know, I think it's just with Lawrence, you see a little bit more of, you know, the natural instincts, the ability to be creative. And, you know, it just comes very natural to him. Now, Fields has some of that too. I think the scheme helps him out so much where, you know, he's not asked to make those whole field reads. He's not asked to do some of the things that Lawrence is asked to do. And, you know, it's that, and that doesn't mean that Fields can't do it though. That's an important point here. It's just that, you know, we might have a better feel that Lawrence can do it. And so, like you mentioned, they're 1 and 2 on the draft board. So, you know, it's not like there is a huge gap between these two players. It will come down to preference. It will come down to how the rest of this season plays out. Now, if Justin Fields plays like he does, how he has the rest of this year, and, you know, whether he wins the Heisman or not, that doesn't matter, but goes to the national title game. How does he do in the playoffs and these big game moments? It'd be awesome if we get to see Ohio State and Clemson again to see these two quarterbacks match up, because these two guys have been, you know, going back to high school, you know, they're 1 and 2 in the recruiting class. They've been pitted against each other for so long. So the more and more opportunities we have to see these guys, the more the narrative will be kind of shaped for their future in the NFL. So I think just based on what we know about Fields right now, based on what we know about Lawrence, Lawrence is still a favorite, but the rest of this chapter has not been written yet. You know, it's important to keep an open mind to how the rest of the season plays out, and because the gap is not very big.
In your opinion, then, the Jets, I mean, look, everyone wants this team going. Anyone who is tied and going to bed in their green and white jammies tonight, I mean, they all want the Jets to go 0-16. They want Trevor Lawrence. Sure. You know, they want the long golden locks and a Jet jersey playing on Sunday. I mean, that's what they want. But if something happens here where, you know, they steal a game against the Raiders, they steal a game against the Patriots, you know, the Jaguars jump them, and it's Jacksonville that ends up winning the Trevor Lawrence sweepstakes. They're sitting there at number two and they end up with Justin Fields. I mean, is that a bad consolation prize, or in your opinion, with the way this thing's trending, I mean, with the Jets being in just as good a hands?
Yeah. I mean, I think that you can look at it and still feel really optimistic. And, you know, when you look at Justin Fields, there's a lot of Dak Prescott to his game. And so if I'm telling Jets fans that, hey, you're going to get a Dak Prescott type of quarterback, a guy that can use his legs to create, a guy that's going to get better and better and better, I think that you'll take that gladly, especially, you know, what's the quarterback play they've seen there recently. But, you know, so much of it depends on, what's the coaching situation going to look like? You know, it doesn't matter. Trevor Lawrence, Justin Fields, Zach Wilson, Trey Lance, whoever the quarterback is, it doesn't matter if they don't have the right coaching in place and the right situation. They have draft capital You know, if they're able to get a second for Sam Darnold, you have two picks in the first, the second, and the third. You have a chance to move around a little bit, go get the guys you want. They'll have some money to spend. If you want to go get an Allen Robinson, get that number one receiver, that's going to help your young quarterback. Bolster the offensive line with some of those early picks, add a pass rusher. A better defense is going to help your quarterback as well. There's so many things that they can do that are going to help whoever they end up drafting. If it ends up being Fields over Lawrence, I'm still taking a lot of optimism into next season and in the future if I'm a Jets fan.
The other thing, Dane, too, is obviously we've spent a lot of time here on the quarterbacks, and I just want to touch on some of the other positions as well, just quickly, because you know the thing that Joe Douglas has done a pretty decent job of. I mean, obviously he's coming from the Ozzie Newsome school of team building, and then spent time obviously in Chicago and Philly before joining the Jets here. But I mean, he wants to build this thing through the draft. I mean, his goal is, and he said it to us when we talked to him at his midseason press conferences. You know, teams aren't bought. You know, so I don't think he's going to be someone piecing together an offseason where he's given $100 million to 30-year-old free agents. You know, he's going to be looking for the guys that are still ascending and really trying to build this thing the right way through the draft. So that's why you've seen him add all this draft capital. You know, like you said, he's got the number one pick, but he's got Seattle's other first rounder. He's got a second rounder. He could have another one if he ends up flipping Sam Darnold. He's got the two third rounders, potentially two fourth rounders as well if the Giants re-sign Leonard Williams. So there's options for him to expand the draft. Obviously, the big positions in need right now for the Jets, receiver still, although with Denzel Mims and Crowder, they're probably going to look for a receiver in free agency. You mentioned Allen Robinson, Kenny Galladay is another guy. Juju, obviously, is somebody that I know Jet fans are tied to. But offensive line, they still got to keep working on that. Pass rusher, still got to work on that. Corner, they still got to work on that. With those positions, is this a relatively deep class for any of those? Do any of those positions kind of jump out at you through your early evaluation of this class November? Do any of those jump out at you in terms of like, you know what, they're picking 20-25 with that Seahawks pick, maybe even down at 28, they could find a pretty good X there. You know, I mean, what is one of the deeper, or what are some of the deeper positions in this draft class that you've seen so far?
Well, I think you look at all those positions. I think there's good value in the late one.
You're gonna make Jets fans go crazy with that. I'm falling in love with you.
No, I think that this is the way I'm shaping up, or the way this draft is shaping up with the draft capital they have and what we know the needs are. I'm excited if I'm a Jets fan, just because I'm excited for what this offseason is going to bring. You look at what Miami's done in the last year and a half with all their draft picks and getting the young quarterback, and you know, the Dolphins are on the upswing. Why can't the Jets do that? First of all, the coaching is going to be important. But you still have an opportunity here to build through the draft. And you look at corner in the late first, or, you know, in the back half of the first round, a Darion Kendrick from Clemson would be an outstanding pick. J.C. Horn, Joe Horn's son, who actually just declared leaving South Carolina, made it official. He'll be in this draft class. A big, long, athletic corner who is not afraid to compete. Sometimes a little too much, and that's why we're talking about him as maybe in the back half of round one, not the top half. But you know, there's a lot of tools there that you want to work with if you're an NFL defensive coach. Offensive tackle, Rashawn Slater, from Northwestern, he's my offensive tackle number two in this draft. Christian Darrisaw from Virginia Tech. These guys would be plug and play right tackles from day one. Put him on the other side, Mekhi Becton. That'd be a lot of fun to watch. And if they do decide to go wide receiver instead of, you know, maybe going the free agent route, wide receiver is another loaded class this year. And yeah, you know, we'll see who declares, who doesn't. But you know, getting a guy like, you know, Rashad Bateman out of Minnesota in the late one. Chris Olave from Ohio State. Maybe if you do end up with Fields, pairing Fields and Olave back together would be a lot of fun. So the way this is shaping up, it's a very strong quarterback class at the top. You know, we don't have a Chase Young this year. We don't have the Bosa's, Myles Garrett. We don't have that top pass rusher. So I don't think there shouldn't be any debate. Jets are going to go quarterback with that early top three pick. And then the way it's shaping up with another one, and then with their early two and then two threes, I think they're in good position to add a pass rusher, a corner, a tackle. And then if they address wide receiver and free agency, this team's looking a lot better pretty quickly.
Keeping the optimism going here this morning. This is good.
I tell you what though, Dane, we don't pay you enough. I'm gonna be honest. I'm listening like you talk about that. You don't pay you enough. Whenever your contract's up, man,
I'm gonna be your agent. I'm calling Paul. I'm calling whoever. I'm gonna be like, dude, just add a zero. Add a zero. Right, that's what he needs.
That works for me. Hey, look,
to the right side, not the left.
The draft brings hope, all right? The draft brings optimism. And I don't know. That's why I love it so much, is because these teams have a chance to get better. I mean, I mentioned the Dolphins, what they've been doing, and it's only going to get better for them with multiple picks, you know, with the Texans picks and all that. Yeah. The Jets have a similar opportunity here. And so, you know, obviously it starts with the front office and the coaching, and they have to have the right people there. We think Joe Douglas can be that guy, you know, with his pedigree and where he's came from. And, you know, my very few conversations I've had with him, I'm ready to think that he can do it, but you know, time will tell.
I was going to say, you say that the draft is a time for optimism, but honestly for Jets fans, I think it's the other way because of the management of this team over the last few years and how badly the drafts have gone. But when you look at the 2019 draft and what Joe Douglas did in his first chance, were you impressed with, I mean, it's 1 year in, so obviously there's going to be time to figure this out, but between Becton and Mims and what they did later on, do you like that draft for him?
Oh, you have to. Yeah. I mean, Mekhi Becton looks like he's, you know, going to be a top five tackle in the NFL. He's on that trajectory. You know, he's, and just, it was just pretty shocking to see how far he fell, because he was a top 10 pick, and, you know, to, for the Jets to get him where they did, I mean, you have to, you know, feel great about that. And it was such a rich tackle class at the top, and all these guys performing well, Jedrick Wills and Tristan Wirfs, and Mekhi Becton's right in there. So hopefully he just stays healthy, continues to grow, continues to develop. I was talking to his trainer the other day about just the growth that he's shown. And, you know, and just when he showed up before the draft process and the maturation he showed throughout the process, he could not talk enough about how he improved and how he's nowhere near a ceiling. So if you have Mekhi Becton in the fold, you're feeling good. And then Denzel Mims, I think he's going to be the perfect number two receiver. You know, I don't know that he's ever going to be a number one, but the speed, the length, you know, he can beat you deep, you know, vertically. He can, you know, you don't want him running a lot of, you know, you want him running a lot of linear routes where one cut, boom, he's going to create a little separation, whether it's slants, whether it's just simple digs, whether you're sending him deep. He can create that separation and be a really nice Robin to whoever your number one receiver is.
This is the last question I have for you, Dane, before we pivot real over to – we have a few listener questions. It's just the Jets obviously are going to be looking for a new head coach. I mean, Adam Gase is not going to be here next year. They're going to be looking for a new one. Matt Campbell, somebody who's obviously somebody the Jets are talking a lot to. I don't – you're obviously scouting the players, but I know you deal with these coaches a lot too. It takes a unique guy to go from the college ranks to the pros. Like, it's not just an easy transition. I mean, it takes, like, the specific kind of person to make the Pete Carroll-type jump and not do there's so many other failures that if Steve Spurrier one is obviously always comes to my mind is like a guy who just didn't work in college, did not work in pros. Dabo Sweeney is another one who's the guy who like people have, are either of these guys jump out of you from what you've gotten to know him over the years? Are either of these guys ones that you would think, you know, yeah, I could see him working on the NFL, or is there even there somebody that you don't necessarily think is getting enough attention right now that you think, ah, you know what? I've talked to him enough. I think he might be able to work at the NFL level.
Well, and, you know, it's funny because, you know, it is such a hard transition. You know, Nick Saban, you would think he'd be able to work in the pros. And obviously that flamed out pretty quickly in Miami. But, you know, Matt Rhule was that guy in the past years, the last few years, where you just knew whenever he goes to the NFL, I mean, he would be a natural fit with just his coaching style, the way he – relates with players, but still demands respect and, you know, treats them as equals, but he's still the superior in the room. It's a really interesting dynamic that takes a certain type of charisma, certain type of coaching style. And I do think Matt Campbell has that to him. Now I'm not sure he's interested in leaving, but I was around Matt when, you know, he was at Mount Union, back in my early days. And just even back then, you knew, this guy is going to be a really good coach, you know, wherever he wants to be. And it's been fun to watch his ascension, and he could be a coach somewhere else if he wanted to. He chooses to be at Iowa State. I think he has that type of coaching style where he's going to relate, but also get the most out of his players. And so, you know, there's so many different types of coaches out there. If you want to go for more of the play caller option, you know, you look at Joe Brady, what he's doing in Carolina. You know, some people think Kellen Moore is going to be a future head coach with, you know, his offensive background and the way he can manipulate the playbook and get the most out of his quarterback. There's different ways they could go here but it's going to be such an important hire. There's no question about it.
All right, Dane, we have a few questions about, you know, as COVID cases are rising and games are being canceled and all-star mm-hmm. games are being canceled, how does that make scouts' job harder and your job harder?
Well, you know, forget my job. You know, we'll figure it out. But for scouts, yeah, no question. It's, you know, because they're not allowed to be doing a lot of traveling. You know, they're allowed to go to these games, but they're still, you know, they're doing Zoom calls with players on campus and things like that. So it does make it a lot more difficult. The East-West Shrine Game is not going to happen. We don't think the NFLPA Collegiate Bowl is going to happen. I talked to Jim Nagy yesterday with the Senior Bowl, and the Senior Bowl is going to happen. They have testing protocols in place. You know, they're canceling basically all the events around the game, but the practices and the games will go on, and they will happen. And it's going to be really important because we don't know what the combine is going to look like. We don't know what pro days and workouts and, you know, the team visits before the draft. We don't know if those are going to happen. So the interview process in Mobile in late January is going to be really important for these teams and these players, so that the coveted Senior Bowl invite will be a little more important this year. I think the toughest part might be just all these opt-outs that we've seen this year. Some pretty notable players opting out. Now, some we know what they are. Ja'Marr Chase from LSU, the wide receiver, he didn't have to play another down. We know exactly what he is. Penei Sewell, the left tackle from Oregon, same thing. But some of these other players that opted out, you know, Nico Collins from Michigan, the wide receiver, he could be on the Jets' radar as a day two wide receiver prospect. You know, there's a couple of guys like that who are talented guys. It's just going to take a little bit more to figure them out. And, you know, do we focus more on just the 2019 tape? You know, what do they look like a year from now? Are they still in shape? There's just a lot more. It's going to be a lot more challenges this year. No question about it.
Well, we've worn you out here, Dane. Thank you so much for coming on. I think we went well over the time that we said we would use you for. But
we could have made another hour out of this.
Yeah, exactly.
We got to hold it back, though. Yeah, I promise I wouldn't keep Connor talking Dane's ear off all morning. So
yeah,
such good information, though, and everybody, you know, I know everybody's waiting for when that draft guide comes out, but it'll be out there. What is the timeline on that? Is that March that comes out?
The goal is always a month before the draft. So okay. Yeah, late March, early April. This year might be a little different because it's harder to gather all the information, that type of thing. But, you know, it'll still be in people's hands weeks before the draft.
All right. We'll check out Prosper. Go ahead.
The next podcast, we're just going to give your cell phone number out and just have people text you whenever they want to know anything. We'll see how that one goes. See how the loyal listeners here that will blow up your phone with thousands of text messages. Hey, what do you think about this random guy? What do you think about this one?
Yeah, my cousin's, he knows a guy over there at Savannah State. That's right, yeah.
Waiting for also, my Monmouth kids to get drafted. That's what I'm waiting for.
Also, you can check out Dane on Prospects to Pros, another of our great podcasts here on the Athletic Podcast Network. That is weekly pretty much right now. It really picks up as we get closer to the draft as well, getting into the Senior Bowl and stuff. A great podcast to check out all, not just the top of the draft, but you guys dive deep into the players that are going to be available. So check that out as well. Thanks a lot, Dane.
Anytime, guys. Thanks.
Thanks, man.
Dane.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
All right, back to the Jets. And Connor, that was so good with Dean and everything that obviously all his information. But one thing that surprised me a little bit is he really seems like he's not so sure that Trevor Lawrence is the slam dunk over Fields.
Yeah, and I think that was something that surprised me a little. I thought, I mean, at least like, again, you talk to different people and you get different opinions, right, on Lawrence. And I think that my stance with Lawrence, I was actually talking about this with somebody the other day, and I said, I was like, you kind of see this a lot every year, that you have like the consensus top pick, that you have like the guy that everyone thinks is going to be the dude. And a lot of times that guy has been talked about forever. Like with Sam, you know, Sam had that big game again in the Rose Bowl against Penn State, and he became the guy that was, oh, he's going to be the number one pick when he comes out. And then, you know, he had like a so-so year that final year at USC, where the interceptions were there, the fumbles were there, he was turning over. USC really didn't have too much on-field success because I guess in something that's kind of followed him to the pros, he wasn't surrounded with too much talent. Yeah. He falls back and people start talking about, you know, Mayfield and Josh Allen and Josh Rosen. But, you know, Sam's kind of always still there. Literally, this kid in Lawrence, he's been in the spotlight like his entire life, like every year. So everyone has been talking about him. And like Dane said, the minute he showed up as a freshman at Clemson, it became, oh, well, he's the number one pick when he comes out. Oh, he's the number one pick. So almost you get to the point where you're exhausted talking about him, you know, and you exhaust everything you could say. There's only so much you can scout this guy. There's only so much you can evaluate this guy. Eventually he is what he is. So you direct your attention to someone else. And that's when you have someone like Justin Fields start stealing the attention, start stealing the spotlight, because he's new. You know, he's the guy no one's talked about yet. He's the one no one's really scouted yet. He's not the one that was on anyone's radar for the last 4 years, but just the last year and a half. I can tell you though, that if this BCS playoffs come and Lawrence gets a chance to play Alabama and he gets a chance to play Ohio State and he gets a chance to play, like Dane referenced, Notre Dame in that ACC championship, you're going to have that gap way back. You know what I mean? Like if he lights it up and he shows the junior year Lawrence is so much different than everyone else, he's going to light this thing up. He's going to light the place on fire and he'll be the consensus pick. But I think what I came away, if I'm a Jet fan, what I came away feeling really good about listening to Dane is that if it's kind of always been this, you got to go 0-16 because you got to get Lawrence, right? Like that was it. Like you need to be 0-16 because you need Lawrence, generational player. Listening to Dane talk just now, listening to him explain what Trevor does well, also what Fields does well. Whether you think the gap is big or not, I think what you can come away feeling okay about is like if the Jets steal a game at these final seven, if they win a game and they're picking two, they're still in good hands. And that's kind of what I really wanted to ask him is like, you know, if this typical Jets thing happens and the Jets are picking number two because they beat the Raiders or they beat the Patriots in week 17, Jaguars lose out, Jaguars go to number one, are they still going to be okay with Fields as they would Lawrence? And if you listen to Dane, and I trust everything that guy says, I mean, I do. I mean, I trust like that guy's word is gospel. You got to feel pretty good about that.
Seemed like he feels bad for Sam Darnold too. Talking to him early on there. Yeah. A couple of the things for the Jets. They did make some moves this week. They claimed Corey Ballantyne off waivers from the Giants. And they claimed Vikings offensive lineman Pat Elfline off waivers as well. Do those guys get thrown into the mix right away, do you think?
No, I wouldn't think so. I think that honestly, the guys at the Jets, Pat maybe, because the Jets have had their issues with Greg Van Roten. Like he's been a problem this year. Like Van Roten has had a lot of issues. He talks a good game. He looks the part. The Jets are happy. You know, the Jets wanted him. They brought him in. They liked his athleticism and thought he'd be a better fit in Adam Gase's offense. He's been a problem. Like he's a big weakness on the right side of the line. I mean, the Jets love obviously what they have in Becton. They know Alex Lewis isn't Zach Martin, but he's a serviceable starter on the left side. And they like what they like him as a leader. They like him as a person. He doesn't make too many mental mistakes. He just needs to stay healthy. Like, and he's fine there. McGovern, obviously he's been dealing with a hamstring injury, but you're not going to replace him at center. And then obviously Fan is a guy who kind of keeps getting better. The one problem that they really have in that line, and the one thing where weekly they try to mask the issue and weekly they're like, all right, how are we going to make sure this doesn't happen? How are we going to hide this? How are we going to do that? It's at right guard. Like that's where there's a problem. And that's where the Jets kind of got to get better. Pat's had success there. I mean, he's had, like, he was a third round pick. He had some success early in his career before injuries took their toll in Minnesota, where he's somebody that I could see coming in here, getting acclimated with the offense, getting acclimated with things, continuing to get healthy. And then maybe in like a week or two, if Van Roten continues to struggle, I could see easily the Jets making the switch and going another direction. Which right now they just don't have anyone they can go with. You know, Cameron Clark is a guy everyone keeps saying the Jets drafted him. You know, bring him in. I wrote about it last week before the bye, or just after the bye, as the Jets were on their bye week. Like the Jets, when Cameron Clark is somebody that has struggled mightily and dealt with a lot of issues in terms of not having enough time to acclimate himself to the NFL. He was one of those guys that coming from Charlotte really needed an offseason. He needed OTAs. He needed mini camp. He needed the Jets don't have a rookie camp, but a rookie acclimation period where he's in for meetings and all that stuff. He needed those things to start getting him ready, then a full training camp, and then maybe midway through the season, he'd be ready to start seeing the field a little bit. Because he didn't have OTAs, because he didn't have minicamp, he was a fish out of water in training camp. I mean, for a second, the Jets were kind of looking at this guy like, holy cow, we might have missed. Like, we might have missed on this pick. Like, this one, this is not looking good. He dealt that injury, kind of got that time to reacclimate himself over the ensuing weeks. You know, almost like training camp was kind of like his OTAs. Then the regular season became his training camp. And now you're starting to see him catch up a little bit. He's still not there, but he is trending in the right direction. I think this will end up being a redshirt year for Cameron Clark. So the Jets don't really have anyone that if they yank Van Roten out of the lineup, they can say, like, we're putting this guy in. You know what I mean? Like, we're going to put this guy in. This guy is going to play. With him out, or with Pat now in the mix, you do have that opportunity to say, like, all right, we're gonna have someone else maybe here to complete with Van Roten. And if he keeps struggling, we can throw someone else in there. Again, this kid's 26. So he's still got, like, his NFL career ahead of him. And you know, the one thing, it's the last point I can make on this, is that I remember talking to people about, like, offensive linemen, and they said, like, it's an acclimation period from, which is what makes what Mekhi Becton's doing so remarkable. There is an acclimation period from when you're drafted as an offensive lineman, center guard, tackle, to then you're playing in the NFL. Like, it takes time. And a lot of times, because there's not a lot of contact in training camp, there's not a lot of contact in all this, and there's not too much playing time in preseason, offensive linemen are developing at a slower rate than what they normally develop at. Like, it takes them a lot of time. You might not see an offensive lineman become the player that he is until year 4 or 5. And that's why you can find random dudes in free agency that you get him in their system, and suddenly they blossom, like James Carpenter. When the Jets signed James Carpenter in 2015, he was kind of a so-so, not really good offensive guard with the Seahawks. Came to the Jets, he was a borderline Pro Bowl player. Like, he was really good with the Jets his first few years there. And then obviously the Jets ended up letting him go. But I think that he's a guy that, you know, 26, young, was a third round pick, obviously has talent. Get him in here, get a new voice, get a new scheme, and maybe he can take off and blossom and be a player for him.
Yeah, I think Ian Rappaport tweeted yesterday that Elfin was claimed by, well, obviously the Jets got the claim because he was the number one on the list, but Ravens, Washington, Bears, Dolphins, and Jaguars all put in claims for him. Yeah. Wanted. Yeah. So we have one question from the chat. This is from Green Wasabi. Any chances the Jets hire a defensive minded head coach like Brian Flores? Guess he's seeing what's all the success going on down there in South Beach.
Yeah. Here's what I would say. Erase offensive minded, defensive minded, all this crap. Look what Joe Judge was, a special teams coordinator. Look what he's doing with the Giants. And like their Giants are 3-7. It's not like they're gangbusters. But if you watch any of those Giant games, you know they got a head coach. Like, that team plays hard every snap. They're just not talented, but they are going 100 miles per hour every play. They're practicing hard. They're doing all this stuff. Like, you watch them, and there's some rookie head coach hiccups. There's some times where he should have gone for it, where he didn't. He took this, he did that, blah, blah, blah. The Giants blew some games. But that's a team that literally, like I said, they have no talent. Like, they're a very talent-deprived team, just like the Jets are, but they're playing hard. Joe Judge was a special teams coach last year. So I think that this mindset needs to change, where you want, like, the next brilliant offensive mind, and you want the next offensive guy. You just want a head coach. You want to find a guy and look at a guy and find the dude that you're like, this guy has head coaching qualities and he can fill it out. And I get why everyone's like, offensive minded works, because if you find an offensive minded person like Cliff Kingsbury, or like the Eagles did with Doug Peterson, or like any of these other top tier offensive minded coaches, what you can say is, like, we have this offensive guy who's rearing our young quarterback who is now not going to leave, right? Because usually if you have, like, you know, the head coach who hires a brilliant offensive coordinator, and that offensive coordinator goes out and has so much success, that guy's going to go away and somebody's going to come and hire the offensive coordinator because he's going to want them. And then suddenly you have to find a new offensive coordinator, and maybe the new offensive coordinator isn't all that good. Like, I get that thought process. But the Jets tried to go that route. You know what I mean? Like, enough. Don't think offensive minded, defensive minded, special teams minded. Don't think anything like that. Just find the right guy that can build a culture, build a team, get the most out of his players, and surround himself with a coaching staff that can have some success. And that guy's your head coach. Go find a head coach. Who cares what minded he is? Just go find a head coach that can make the Jets relevant and make them competent and get the most out of them. If it means it's a Joe Judge special teams guy, fine. If it means it's a Brian Flores defensive minded, fine. If it means a guy who was a head coach before, who's looking for another gig, like Harbaugh or Andy Reid was when he went to the Chiefs, fine. It doesn't matter. Or a college guy like Rule, or offensive minded, like whatever. I don't care. Like, just go find a guy that's going to be a head coach, a leader of men, a guy who's going to be able to get the most out of his players. Find the best guy to run his offense. Find the best guy to run his defense. Not meddle in everything and knows what he's doing. Go find that guy, and who cares what minded he is.
That guy's out there. You just got to go and get the right guy, and hopefully they do plenty of interviews and work their way through it, and Joe Douglas is hopefully the right guy to make that hire. We'll be back later in the week, though. We have another guest coming on. Is that confirmed?
Dan Popper.
Popper's coming on. All right.
Yeah, Popper. One of my, for loyal Jet fans who are the people who read every piece of article that comes out on the Jets, that's, I don't know why you would like suscept yourself to that kind of torture, but for anyone who reads everything that comes out on the Jets, I mean, Popper used to cover them for the New York Daily News when they had, like, he ended up going to Jacksonville for us for a little bit, covered the Jaguars for a year, and then he just got promoted to go cover the Chargers in L.A. He's out there with his long-term girlfriend, who's I'm sure soon to be his fiance, not to put the pressure on him like we do Marissa's boy over here, but he's one of my best friends. Like, he's going to be at my bachelor party. He's going to be at my wedding. Like, I love the kid. He's been one of my best friends since he joined the beat. I was one of the younger guys on the beat at that time, and Pop was one of the other young people to actually be there for me to like grasp onto. So I love the kid, and he does amazing work. He's an incredibly talented writer. It'll be fun to have him come here, and we'll tell some war stories, preview what's to come, obviously, and then talk a little Jets Chargers and just see how he likes it over there in LA. But for anyone who's looking for nice writing on the Chargers, I'm not just saying this because he works for The Athletic. Like, Pop's one of the best in the business, and he's definitely worth reading.
So that's coming up. You forgot to mention that he covered Maryland football before all of that. You know.
Ah, yes, Maryland.
He's a Terp.
Maryland, that's right.
He's a
Terp. And the Chargers are really interesting.
Maryland, Ohio State this week.
I know.
I was very upset over this, the COVID restrictions. But
me too.
So far,
they're all getting healthy, that's for sure.
Ohio State's playing this week, right? They're playing Indiana. Who's ranked? Is it Indiana?
Yeah, Indiana's in the top 10.
Yeah,
because they wiped the floor with Penn State. Or they didn't wipe the floor. It came down to that 2-point conversion. But
they beat Michigan.
That game's still on, right? That game's going to be played, and Fields is going to be on there, because that's one where, like, I really want to watch that game. I have a Friendsgiving on Saturday, but I really like, that's one where I'm posting up on Saturday to watch that game.
Indiana's defense is pretty good too. So
yeah, that's why I want to see Fields. I've never watched Fields. Like, I really, like, I saw him at the BCS playoffs, but I haven't like watched him. So like, now with all this hype about like Fields, and it's like the Jets are going to be picking number one or number two, it's like, all right, I got to start watching this kid. And I want to see him in person now, and a good team. I don't want to see Fields play Rutgers or like beat up on like these puny teams. Like, I want to see him play in a top team, and Indiana's got a good defense. I want to see him. So I'm looking forward to that game. Either going to watch it at Friendsgiving, or I'm going to watch it at my home before I head over to Friendsgiving. My buddy's doing a deep fried turkey. Very excited about that. Give Rodney Konzelman, give him a little shout out. Doing a deep fried turkey and a ham, and Bree's making pumpkin crumb cake. Oh, I'm gonna show up 350 pounds for the next podcast.
Thanksgiving food power rankings coming up. All right, so we'll have that for you on Thursday on YouTube, probably Friday for the podcast with Popper coming on to get you ready for that Chargers game later this week. If you haven't already, if you have a friend, if you need a subscription to The Athletic, go to theathletic.com/thecantwaitpodcast. You can join right now for just $1 per week. We'll talk to you again later this week.
Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.